been taking your estrogen supplements that I sent you. I told you, it boosts your empathy.
Is that why I was looking at Wonder Bras earlier on?
Exactly. I'm crying at the dog adverts.
I'm suddenly intrigued.
After the finger incident, I sent John a loving package, all these homely feminine items, and estrogen was in there so that he can boost his supplement.
I'm it wearing the tights right now.
Yeah, the film. You remember that film?
That's going to rub a bank.
Mel Gibson. Was it Mel Gibson?
It was Mel Gibson, yeah. You want me to be struck by lightning whilst drying my hair in the bath?
No, I've given you all of the ability to reflect on your behaviour and just be a lot more empathetic and compassionate. I feel it's working, apart from the comments that you've made on this. But maybe that's because Ryan's here and you need to up your macho level today.
Whenever I think of the words Ryan and macho, those definitely go together.
Anyway, thank you for that delightful banter. Hopefully, Lee, you can use some of that. That was the end of banter.
That's it.
That's the end of banter.
That was the end of our banter. Continue.
It's really like a sexual experience with India. It's all over. Done. I'm out of here.
How do you know? I am not that kind of person, actually. I'm voracious.
Satiable.
Yeah, that's right.
Talking of Christmas, is it the same when it comes to pigs in blankets?
No, I don't eat any of that stuff.
Vegan.
I don't eat any of that stuff.
Yeah, like the vegan stuff, like the fake pigs in blankets, is just really unappealing.
One of the beautiful things about the roast dinner is all the vegetables. They're all the, you know,
exactly.
The nice bits. So just have more of them. They're lovely.
Nut roast. Other.
Nut roast is a classic, but also make a really good chestnut and mushroom and leek pie. There's lots of other things you can do.
There's two things, isn't there? There's just two things.
There are many.
Salad.
And if you ever
Christmas
have
salad.
The privilege of joining me at my Christmas dinner table, then you will find out.
And then you'll be like, where's the bloody turkey?
Yes, that's exactly why I'm not inviting you.
She knows there'll be a lot of comments about someone getting a good stuffing. That's why she will refuses to invite us around.
Or turkey baster for that. Anyway, she's still waiting to build.
Oh my gosh, guys. End of banter.
Okay, seriousness. Hello and welcome to the Digitals in a Cruel World podcast brought to you by the Digital Disruptors. And the place to go to get all of your app news, tips and tricks in the digital transformation and accounting industry. My name's Ryan Piercy and I'm joined by the wonderful John Toon and Indy Tatler. So first, Indy, how has your last fortnight been? Are you stressed at the moment or happy?
I am relatively happy. Oh, she says, look, I'm taking such pauses. Yes, stressed. This countdown to Christmas that kicks in, usually just after Halloween, and you just feel, oh God, I need to get everything ready. And suddenly, like I'm more stressed because it's end of year, got to meet deadlines, it's darker, rainier, it feels like everything is just a little bit more frantic. So maybe I'm a little in need of a delightful spa weekend of some sort.
I recently went on a spa weekend. I love a spa weekend.
That's why I brought it up.
Oh, I see, yes.
Lucky you.
A beautiful spa suite, and God, it made me feel like I just wanted to stay there. I couldn't afford it. It was incredibly expensive. Can't do that all the time. But yeah, want to go back to another spa experience. And you, John, have you recently been to a spa?
No, but I did go to the corner shop.
Pretty much the same.
I thought so, yeah.
I used to work and live and own a corner shop by way of my parents.
Is this how you know so much about suite?
Yes. My dad was a very enterprising man. He tried to take on Blockbuster before there was a Netflix and whatnot. You name it, he tried to sell it.
On that news and bring up Blockbuster, maybe we should talk about modern technology and dive into app news.
Whoop, whoop.
Gravity Software, based over in the US in Detroit, have announced that they are revolutionizing accounts payable automation. They have built a suite of products that are built off the top of Microsoft Cognitive Services, an AI builder. And I had a quick look at this. I was reading the press release because I was quite fascinated to see what it was that they actually did. And they allow you as a user to take a PDF of a vendor bill, extract all the information and put that into what they call Gravity Vouchers. So that's their sort of ERP equivalent type solution. So very similar to iPlicit or Xledger over here in the UK. Then I read a bit more through the press release, and it became more and more dull as time went on in terms of this is just out-of-the-box technology that they've used from Microsoft. To prove how easy it is to do this, my team have built an expenses app that uses exactly the same technology. It's taken us about 2 months to get there. So it's pretty simple. Even an idiot like me can do it. It's not changing the world of accounts payable as far as I'm concerned. It's merely replicating what's already out in the market and using off-the-shelf products to do it. Yeah, disappointing.
I think you put yourself down, John. You're at least a high-performing idiot.
I'm more of a hyperactive idiot, I think.
Oh, yeah. Probably. Yeah, not high performing. I've got something on AI, hopefully a bit more interesting. Well, I'd say it's come across as a bit different. We've talked about QuickBooks Online. We've talked about Xero and what they're doing with AI. Now got information from NetSuite. We're not lucky enough or have enough money to go to Suite World in Las Vegas, but we do have the ability to read news from it. So NetSuite have brought some AI features into their technology. The first one they've done is called Text Enhance, and that enables the user inside NetSuite to be typing information in and bring relevant information from different areas of the program. If they're typing certain bits, it will prompt text, as you see in other platforms, but bring in key information from other areas of NetSuite. The second one is called Customer 360 and provides sales reps with AI-powered customer summary right on each record. It gives insights and also enables them to identify potential upselling opportunities. So that was a bit more interesting than Text Enhance. We've seen the Text Enhance features inside other software. The Customer 360, a bit different.
I've got a little something that's a slightly more emotional. We spoke about end of life for different softwares last time we covered Comma with its acquisition into Weaver. We're now also saying goodbye to Hindsight. John Jenkins, who has sunsetted his application, not taking the decision lightly. It was a software that delivered data-driven insights to different accountants. And he goes into a little bit of depth of his backstory in terms of where he started it and a territory that for him, he vowed he would never revisit in terms of the emotional turbulence and the financial turbulence that comes with startups. Brave decision, and obviously not one that he is taking lightly. There's a few more details. Users will be removed from the 31st of December. What will happen to the client data? So active users will be deleted from the 1st of January 2024. They will disconnect their organization from Xero, and all client data will be deleted from the servers. If you want to know a little bit more about this, then there is a page on his website that goes into the detail in terms of your billing and when that will get cancelled. And he makes some recommendations on some alternative apps that might be helpful in Xenon Connect. And there is a partner program. So if you would like to join and get access to that, then John is happy to recommend you on to them as well.
Yeah, and I've got some news that isn't necessarily news, but it's news to us. After announcing that Intuit QuickBooks had gone down this model of a freemium pricing for some of their products, we got reminded by Sage that they had also released a freemium set of products way back on the 5th of April. So this is definitely news. So we hold our hands up. We completely missed this back then. But they have announced, or they launched back then, two plans. And the key one, which is the free product, is one that's targeting sole traders in particular, built around the high likelihood that everyone thought that MTD for income tax was expected to come in. And I guess from Sage's point of view, they're just trying to not lose the momentum that was lost in the wider accounting market in terms of the delays and stuff that came through. As part of the process, they're also promising to connect sole traders to accountants and bookkeepers to help out with the compliance side of things. So another freemium product in the market. We've got two of the big players in the UK now fighting it out. It'll be interesting to see who else joins the party.
Yeah, and Xero Xero Go that they were releasing and was initially going to be free and then was going to be paid, possibly is paid now. Not heard too much about it for a while. It makes sense for that to become the free solution because it's in that space the others are in. So maybe they'll make that free offering. As we discussed previously, it's all about data and the value of data. So if they can get enough data into those free versions, then yeah, you can get some value from it.
It's great that Sage reached out to highlight the fact that they had pioneered this. I don't know that Sage would benefit in the same way that Intuit QuickBooks can. To QuickBooks, you have value in the other softwares that QuickBooks has in its ecosystem that benefit as well from having that data availability. Credit Karma in terms of business creditworthy nurse. You've also got things like MailChimp as well, in terms of how it links to transactions on the sales side or origination side. So I still think that these freemium softwares, if you really are trying to monetize the data, need to have other applications that can see the customer and unlock better access to financing. But I would say that, wouldn't I?
Yeah, it's true. But yeah, maybe we need to dig in and get a bit more insights into why. Stay tuned for a future show, potentially. No promises. So I've got some information on QuickBooks Online. They've released a new template system for chart accounts for accountants. So if you're rolling up a new client, you can just select a chart account template and roll that straight in, rather than having to go in and edit each individual chart account yourself. So in the back end, when you're creating a new business in the accountant tools side, you select your chart accounts template, and then it just rolls that into your organization. Another bit that they're also released or are releasing, I'm still not entirely certain which jurisdictions this is in yet, but it's e-commerce capabilities for QuickBooks. So this is designed to help businesses manage orders and inventory with less work, bringing more automation into that. And they try to bring this in before the holiday season to enable that more streamlined way of operating in a peak period. It should allow QuickBooks users to sync across sales channels, so all of the products, orders, inventory, and payout data directly into the QuickBooks Online platform, spot opportunities inside the system by seeing trends. So this probably ties into the AI that we've been talking about. Those trends may come a little bit later, or at least be built on as they build out that AI product, to track inventory quantity. And one of the key problems when you're doing this is linking across all of your different sales platforms. So if they've managed to align that across the sales platforms, that's a huge rollout for QuickBooks. And then identify low stock and replenish those via creation of purchase orders, and also be able to track where your money is going and your profitability across all your product lines.
Building off the back of that Trade Gecko acquisition that Intuit made a little while ago, and definitely brings them up to parity with the likes of Unleashed and Deer, etc.
Yeah, so I think that's my guys. It is building on that engine. I know they got rid of the Trade Gecko brand, but they're building in the same way that Locate inventory is being built into Xero in the US. That's why I'm not certain if it's in the UK yet or it's in the US. I'll have to do some digging. Maybe talk to the QuickBooks Online chaps that we tend to get on the pod.
Absolutely. I've got a little bit of an update from Fathom as well. They've just launched custom terminology into the product. So you maybe want to use Fathom for, say, charity accounts, and you want to get rid of the fairly standard trading profit and loss type terminology that you would get in there. So revenue, cost of sales, profit, etc. And you want to replace that with something that's more suitable for that client. So income, net expenditure, etc. Great little functional update. Just makes life a little bit easier for those of us who do report across different sectors, where that little bit of tailoring seems to make all the difference for clients. And my only objection, I would say, is that in the example that they give, is they talk about the UK terminology uses the term revenue. That's not UK terminology. UK terminology is turnover, right? That's US
sales.
Sales, that's US terminology. And then they refer to the fact that IFRS refers to revenue recognition, but that's just an internationalization.
And in other news, the ICB Luca Awards were this week, and Free Agent has been named the friendliest software of the year.
I just like on the show notes that Ryan's put a typo in, and it says Free Agent wins friendliest software. So it sounds like they've had some sort of Four Weddings and a Funeral type scrap on stage with someone else.
And that's how you get the win. It's, what was the wrestling matches that you used to do? You used to all go in, Royal Rumble, they all get on the stage. But they did it in a friendly way, at least. They've had a decent week, haven't they? Because they've also done some releases on Amazon.
They have. I guess before I kind of dive into the Amazon side, because I do want to run into that, because I really like that. But the fact that what the heck is the friendliest software? Is it just that they're just very smiley and happy all the time? And the fact you say they've won it four times, what, 2019, 2020, 2022 and 2023. What are they doing in 2021? Miserable in 2021. Hated life.
It makes you want to wonder, if you've got friendly software awards, can we have Disingenuous Software Awards, the most communicative software awards, The most miserable software award, the hungover software award.
Oh, the hungover one, yeah, we should definitely have that.
Come on, guys, they're super friendly every time we've spoken to them. And I actually think one thing that we have not done, if I think about the history of this podcast, is we haven't had anyone from Friendly Free Agent on our podcast before. So maybe that's something that we should change and see how friendly they are.
Yeah, maybe it'll raise our game and we'll be friendlier following it. Something we should definitely do.
One can only hope. One can only hope, Brian.
It's unlikely. I guess some actual news from Free Agent is they have integrated into Amazon to bring all of that sales data from Amazon directly into the Free Agent platform, automatically categorizing that data, I guess moving out the fees associated and allocating that where it needs to go. So all those third-party apps that you get, such as A2X, Link My Books, and potentially the likes of Dex Commerce, where it brings all that data and pushes it into your finance system, Free Agent are built directly into it. And they've done a bit of a comparison against those platforms. And one thing that they've identified is, as part of the integration, they can bring in 6,000 orders per month compared to 200 on those other platforms on the mini tier at about a third to a half of the cost once it becomes chargeable next year. So if you are a Free Agent and you do e-commerce, it's a no-brainer to roll out. If you're in the e-commerce side, with what Free Agent have been doing, building out their platform over the last year or so, they've now brought themselves into a proper player in this space. It's no longer a three race as we used to see it, as Sage, QuickBooks Online and Xero. Free Agent starting to push in this space as well.
I'm not sure we can justify that comment, Ryan. A three-horse race with Sage in there with integrations. I'm not sure about that. But I do agree with you on the Free Agent point. I went to a Free Agent roadshow probably around about 12 months ago, and they did announce then that they were going to make a huge push into integrations because they realized that was one area of the business they probably neglected. And some of the stuff they're doing at the moment is incredible. And touching on that, they've also just announced some enhancements to the integration that they have with Metal, which is the bank, the sort of the neo bank that NatWest own alongside Free Agent. And it gives you the ability as a Metal user to see your live rolling tax liabilities accruing as you complete bookkeeping tasks in Free Agent. So if you're VAT registered and you're a business and maybe you've got personal tax liability for the owner manager as well, you can see all those three tax liabilities accruing alongside your bank account information. So this is a fascinating integration. It's really powerful, actually. I'm genuinely impressed by this. And it'll be very interesting to see whether some of the other neobanks in particular, because this will be where they will try to establish similar connections with either Free Agent or with other softwares to bring this information back into that those kind of platforms.
Yeah, finally, someone has integrated into Metro for bank feeds, which is, for me, brilliant because it's such a frustration that no one could do that. Metro just did not play ball from their side. The fact that Free Agent have managed to break down that boundary and integrate and bring in bank feeds is brilliant. Pivoting from that, we've had Xero updates as well. Little bits in that. You've got a tweak to more reporting, but from my side, what I've seen is quite a smooth transition from the old reports across the new reports. We've not seen the uproar we saw when it was announced. It's been generally a smooth transition across, and that's because of how much work has been done in there. And the enhancements they keep building out in that actually are pretty powerful. The other bit that they've really superpowered recently is the contact screen. If you have not played in the new contact screen, the ability to filter between different transactions, bring different information, and just see information in a much easier format has really enhanced that area. And then finally, where a lot of development is going from Xero is the integrations into Xero HQ and XPM. So you've got a single record of truth throughout multiple platforms. They're definitely building out that XPM platform further.
I've got one as well. Xero Awards have introduced the judges who will be taking on the task of selecting 12 winners for accountants, bookkeepers, and app partner awards next year. Is Pam Phillips, the managing director of John Phillips, who had previously won the Small Firm of the Year in 2022. And she was also awarded Xero MVP. Russell Frayne, the head of UK digital accounting solutions at Azets. Azets, who were listed as a Xero award winner as National Partner of the Year. Georgie Rollings, the co-CEO of Starfish Accounting Limited. Again, another Xero MVP in 2023. Matt Flanagan, co-founder of Apicus and managing director of Bluehub. Everyone knows Matt, obviously. He's a long-time Xero award judge and partner of Xero. Emma Fox, the founder and managing director of Fresh Financials. Again, Fresh Financials took home the Zero Award for Bookkeeping Partner of the Year in 2023. And our beloved Jonathan Gaunt, who is the director of FD Works and soon to be probably a replacement for John Toon on the pod, if I'm not mistaken, right? He also took home the Community Impact Award for 2023. So good luck to all those that have managed to make the deadline and win an award for 2024.
Yeah, congrats, future winners. I'm not applying this year, so it won't be me. We've got a smaller pool to compete against, although I'm not sure it's competing against anything I do anyway. But I've got some news from iPlicit linked in with iPass technology. Now, if you've not heard of iPass technology before, we have spoken about it, but not in this term. It's integrated platform as a service, tools such as Zapier. So you now can use tools such as Zapier with iPlicit to build out connections with other systems. It enables you to connect the iPlicit system into about 6,000 other apps by using low-code or no-code technology. Now, one of the weaknesses of iPlicit, which is a very powerful mid-tier accounting system, is that you didn't have many out-of-the-box connections. You've not got a Xero App Store. So the fact that it integrates into Zapier now massively allows for a lot more. If you've got a different CRM, you've got a different reporting technology, you can just pull the data through. So that's a big thing. Got something from Apron, very small here, but Apron have released the any of feature, meaning that you don't have to go for an entire approval flow. You can just go, any of these people can approve it, and it should speed up that approval process. So little feature there, but yeah, I'd say quite interesting.
They are smashing it. And hopefully we will have a certain fella from Apron, our new friend Bogdan, will be joining us on a podcast very soon. A little bit of news from Capium, who have announced their AML offering in their new charity accounts module. So there's three checks that they have added: UK company check, credit screen check, and international ID check, offered as part of their overall AML package. And there's an individual cost per check as well. They're doing some really good things at the moment, releasing into charity accounts, because that's a new one for them.
I've got something from RQ, where they're trying to enhance advisory services for accountants. Oh God, advisory services for accountants. How many apps promote this? RQ is a tool of linking information across to those such as solicitors to refer work in. And if you've not used RQ, or you're not aware of RQ, but you need to refer work into solicitors, definitely check it out. It's one that's gone through the early adopters hub, an interesting piece of technology. And then to wrap up app news this episode, I do love to bring a new software from the Xero App Store in, and we've got one called Greenly, another carbon accounting software. But this one's a bit different in that Greenly has its own app store. So you can connect lots of different carbon-focused technology into the Greenly platform and, yeah, do a lot more with it.
I am delighted to welcome Alex von Schoenmeister from Xero back to the pod. So it's his second appearance on here. That we don't have that many guests that make a second appearance yet. So really delighted to have you. We're going to be covering some interesting topics. Obviously, Xero roadshows are happening at the moment. We've got the latest Xero business insights to cover. And I'm sure you'll be telling us about all the secrets that are going to be discussed at the investor calls and things later on today as well. So we'll look forward to that.
Thank you very much, John. I appreciate it.
And it's been a while, Alex, since we've had the benefit of your company. But when we first spoke to you, you were still quite new into Xero, around the XeroCon last year. So it was about 15 months back.
At the time, I would have been with Xero for about 7 months. And now I'm a month away from my 2-year anniversary. So there you go. Time flies.
That's incredible. And in that time, you have at least had the benefit of a second CEO. So we're really interested to hear your reflections on the last 15 months since we spoke and how things have been going in your journey and under the tenure moving from Steve Vamos to Sukhinder now. So it'd be really good to hear how it's been from your perspective and how that affects the EMEA link up and relationship with the global Xero team.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about that. The first thing I'll say is it's not the first time I'm in a company while there's a CEO transition. And you have to assume, and in both the experiences I've had, it's the case, you have to assume that boards know what they're doing, right? There's a reason why publicly traded companies have a board. There's a reason why those boards are, amongst other things, in charge of CEO appointments and CEO succession. And I honestly have to say, hand on heart, I absolutely loved working with Steve and getting to know Steve and seeing Xero operate under his leadership. And I'm 1,000% convinced that Steve was the right CEO for the right time for Xero at that period. But equally, I'm really loving to work with Sukhinder. I think the board has gotten it right in the sense that Xero had just naturally in its history gotten to a certain milestone where the next leadership needed to arrive, and they did a great job in finding Sukhinder there. Look, Steve and Sukhinder are stylistically very different. Steve was a post-founder CEO, and the post-founder CEO is a tricky gig because you're very much trying to carry that founder mentality still in the company and that energy from a founder while at the same time lay the groundwork for scalability and for certain processes. And as a company gets to a certain size, companies need a different type of governance and a different type of organizational structure. Steve did a great job of doing that. And now we're now 17 years old as a company globally, right? But now I think Sukhinder's arriving at the next stage. If we are going to compete with some of the largest software SaaS companies in the world, not just Australian SaaS companies or New Zealand SaaS companies, but global companies, then what will it take to get to that next level? What will that take from a product and technology investment point of view? What will that take from some of the go-to-market motions? What does that take from a globalization point of view outside of our heartland, which for many years obviously has been Australia and New Zealand? You know, I'm really enjoying working with Sukhinder. She's a real force of nature. She's an extremely smart, but at the same time, very empathetic CEO. And she's moving us to the next level, which is exciting.
Yeah, and you've got a new chief product officer as well. And there's just a lot of change that has happened in Xero over the last couple of years. And from our side, I feel we can feel it as well. We can feel there's a shift. I guess you can feel that internally.
Yeah, definitely. And look, it's no secret. To some extent, my arrival in the UK was also part of a change, right? There's generally speaking, just natural windows for certain chapters closed for certain people and new chapters open for next. And it's in no way, shape or form a criticism for the people that took the company, scaled the company up to a certain point, right? And to name names, we all know Gary Turner and Glenn Foster and some of the people here in the UK who, God, they deserve a monument, right? What they built with Xero in this country is absolutely phenomenal. At the same time, I think there was a natural moment where what they enjoyed doing and the scale at which they enjoyed doing it at had started reaching its limit. And that's where I came in. And to some extent, you're having similar change at a global level amongst various functions, right? The jolly or new chief product officer comes in with a different type of managing global product team experiences than her predecessor. Equally, Ashley is a global chief revenue officer with some of her background comes at it from a different angle and at a global scale.
It's so wonderful to see and hear a company taking seriously some of the data around having more of a gender balance, actually, and representation. And I love how Xero does that. And I have had feedback from other people that work in Xero that you are a very big advocate for that. So props to Xero for a moment, just for the fact that right now, if you look at the stats and the data, you should outperform the rest, where it's those companies that are good versus those that are great.
First of all, thanks, Indy, and you're making me blush. That's a huge compliment you just paid me, so thank you for that. This is going to sound odd. The reality is, a few years ago, I probably would have told you I thought about it a lot more. I was academically learning to embrace diversity because I knew it was the right thing to do. But it wasn't necessarily a natural instinct, right? I come from an extremely privileged background. And so I've had to study, I've had to learn, and I've had to experience diversity to embed it, not just academically, but make it instinctive. Ironically, nowadays, I almost don't think about it. And it's not totally true. I'm fully aware of the fact that as a leader of a team or an organization, or in this case, as a managing director, I'm fully aware that I do play a role. What I say matters. The way I behave matters. The way I exemplify certain things matters. So I'm aware of that. But I'm not consciously doing things for that. I've now experienced diverse teams and I've experienced non-diverse teams. And I can tell you, hand on heart, diverse teams are better. No question. I just think that we in companies have a role to play in making society better. And part of that role is making sure that we are vocal and we use our influence and our voice to drive diversity. And that's not just gender diversity. We have ERGs at zero representing different ethnicities. We have ERGs when it comes to LGBTQ+. We have ERGs for veterans. We have ERGs around families and neurodiversity. And we're just such an incredibly complex and colorful society. It's beautiful to be able to be part of creating an environment where everybody can be their best version of themselves.
You make a really important point there, Alex. Too often, what we see in organizations is enforced diversity or plans to elevate people, which sometimes can be to the detriment of others. I'm not a huge fan of that personally.
Yeah.
So I can understand why some organizations take that approach.
At the same time, John, I've been in environments where there was a bit of that enforced diversity. And look, I may have benefited from that, right? That enforcement may have been a trigger I did need earlier in my career to force me to go, well, wait a minute, right? Maybe I should listen up. And maybe it's easy for me to sit here now in my early 50s and pretend to be this wise man who always knew. I didn't always know, right? I was a young and innocent manager at some point. And it has helped me to just over the years be exposed to it more and more often, to the extent that it has become second nature now.
Let's pivot away from that and talk about the Zero Small Business Index and some of the results that we've seen from that fairly recently. And I've got a couple of takeaways, and then hopefully you can maybe dive into the numbers a little bit more for us, because obviously there's two accountants on the call here who are desperate to talk numbers. It was really interesting to see the overall indexes showed that there was a decrease in business performance, and that was more or less across the board in every territory that you have a presence in. The UK in particular is below the sort of demarcation line in terms of what does an economy that's treading water look like. And then there were two key ones in particular that really stood out for me, was that a lot of other territories have shown payments and late payments continuing to trend down. And the UK seemed to be the exception to the rule with this trending up of late payments and overall payment terms as well. What do you think the impacts of that are, and what do you think the drivers of that are, particularly in the UK?
Yeah, John, I won't lie. I think the XSBI data gives us cause for concern, right? And as you know, it's extrapolated from hundreds of thousands of businesses. We validated with the ONS even before getting the data, just by being out there and talking to small businesses. It's tough going out there, right? Cost of living crisis, interest rates, inflation, struggles in finding talent, holding on to talent, et cetera, et cetera. And so to some extent, when we release a quarterly Zero Small Business Index, it kind of validates some of the conversations we're having. The first thing to point out too is, yes, there's sales growth, but it's only 1.1% gross. And then when you net out inflation, that is actually negative year-on-year growth, right? And it has slowed down from where it was last quarter. So there's a real challenge. And if I then compare that qualitatively to the conversations that I have with many of the accounting and bookkeeping practices, a lot of time are currently in the business of helping businesses survive, or in some cases, helping businesses go into administration. As we know from the ONS,
yeah,
we only have more small businesses shutting down rather than new businesses being born in the UK. And that trend has been going for some time.
The amount of businesses that are shutting down is at a peak, isn't it, since kind of COVID times? I guess that drag, the amount of times that businesses have been struggling, it's finally hit that level where they just can't or don't want to fight anymore.
Well, I think it's that, Ryan. And then the other thing, obviously, what we hear from businesses or from their advisors is some businesses were able to stay afloat thanks to some of the COVID help they got from the government. But to some extent, it was almost an artificial extension of some of kind of their natural trends. We're probably seeing a little bit of a post-COVID effect in terms of more business going down. Now, don't get me wrong, there are a lot of small businesses doing incredible, right? And what I love about it, Indy, we were talking about diversity earlier, and talk about the diversity of the small business fabric in this market, right? It's just every time you meet small businesses, they're wonderful. Every story kind of should be a book, right? You could write books and books about them. They're extremely resilient people. Now, some topics that come out when you ask them what their biggest worry is right now, cash flow is going to be topic number 1, 2, and 3. They're struggling with cash flow, period. And look, to some extent, some of that may be kind of behavioral or cultural. Small businesses are more easily intimidated by some of the larger suppliers, which means they go into the negotiation from the beginning, almost, if you will, with much softer attitude. They will be shyer in following up an unpaid invoice.
You touched on a point that I wanted to pick up with you there, Alex. The data shows that we're seeing a late payments issue, particularly in the UK compared to the global territories. And you also mentioned that sales are down effectively. But we've seen in the data that you've got from the US and Canada that there seems to be an inflection point. Payment terms and things have come down. The US and Canada are very famously deregulated. And we've talked for a long time in the UK about improving regulation around late payments and things. Do you think regulation would improve things? Or actually, do we need to get into SMEs and say to them, look, stand up to your customers a little bit more, ask for that money a little bit more proactively, be a bit more effective around your processes and systems?
I think we need all of the above, John, to be honest. I was at a meeting at the Department of Business and Trade this morning talking about the need for regulation on late payments specifically, right? And our point of view has always been, yes, technology and tools will help, right? Having zero and having better visibility on your numbers and being able to look at what your receivables and payables look like, technology has a role to play. This kind of more behavioral, cultural, or attitudinal aspect of how you chase a payment certainly will help. But then there's this notion around, is there an opportunity for the government to think of sticks and carrots, if you will, in terms of both celebrating good payers, why not? But especially for publicly listed companies, mandating some sort of reporting in terms of their payment terms. And we just talked about diversity earlier, right? We know that publicly listed companies now have to report on some gender diversity numbers. And most companies now, publicly listed companies, as part of some of their ESG obligations, need to report on their carbon footprint. Well, why don't we? You don't even need to penalize them financially, but take advantage of the fiduciary responsibility of board members on publicly listed companies by making sure that they report out on their payment terms and the extent to which they are actually meeting those payment terms. We call it unapproved debt, as you know, right? We shouldn't even talk of late payments. We should talk, it's unapproved debt. Large companies are getting a free credit on behalf of the small companies.
Definitely, yeah. We work very well in this country of guilt tripping people into doing the right thing. That's the way to push it. I've been at the Zero Roadshow recently, and I believe you had representatives come across from government. How did they find it?
The feedback we get, as I think part of the challenge is oftentimes is just you think small businesses, but you don't really until you go and talk to them. You can read the statistics. Even our Zero Small Business Index is great. I love the data and the numbers, but nothing replaces a conversation. And small businesses are very busy people, so they don't have a lot of time for conversations. Allowing government representatives to come in and talk to accountants and bookkeepers who spend the most time with small businesses was, I think, really eye-opening for them. So we got great feedback in terms of them realizing how intimate our Zero community is and how valid or how credible that community is as a representation of the small business ecosystem.
Before we pivot to the roadshows, because we're really keen to hear this more about your experience touring the country, the points how we can mandate more or enlist more support for small businesses to manage the unapproved debt. About a year back, just before we met, we'd also spoken to Steve Vamos about some of the priorities that Zero was taking on, not just about the visibility of the data, as you said, but instead being able to unlock and rapidly give businesses the access to payments, speeding up that cycle. And Zero has the means to embed finance capability, has done that with Rapid Cash and trials in the UK, has done that with iWocker and trials in the UK, has acquired Waddle on top of that, but then stepped back from that and now has a strategic partnership with Stripe. And has Zero got an active stance that says this is no longer Zero needs to be the one to solve this? Or how are you looking at that? Because there's still some rumors out there that maybe there is space for Zero to be the bank or the neobank for small businesses?
That's a long question, Indy, so I'll give you a long answer. No, I'll try and break it down. It makes perfect sense.
I did that on purpose.
You drive a very good point. There's no question that we still believe and we're very committed that the Zero experience allows and should allow for better embedded financial instruments as part of that experience, right? Whether it is an easier way to issue invoices out of Xero as part of your Xero experience without having to leave the flows, whether that is the ability to have those invoices include a pay now button and collect payment more easily and more quickly, whether it is the ability to, within Xero, pay bills and pay those bills more easily, whether it is the notion of potentially having access to rapid cash or some sort of credit. And what you may be perceiving as us leaning in and then backing off and leaning in, backing off, that's Xero's way of testing its way through what is the best user experience we can offer and who is the best partner to offer it with. I will dispel the rumor. We do not want to become a bank or a neobank, or at least have no plans in that direction that I know of. But we will work with, and we are looking to work with, the best partners to embed those partners in either the payable flows or the receivable flows and make sure that we make payments as quickly as possible. We do very much focus and have a priority emphasis on the payment side more so than the credit and the lending side. That doesn't mean we don't partner with companies that offer that. But in terms of embedding, it's really important that we embed the payment side. And then the last thing that I would mention, as you know, we work very closely with the small businesses, but also with the accountant bookkeepers to make sure that they understand the benefit of turning on bank feeds and using automatic bank feed reconciliation, right? Because it's using Xero and not turning on your bank feed. It's a bit of a shame. It's one of the kind of power tools in the Xero user experience. And it's definitely something we're still working on.
Brilliant to hear. And you also touched on one point around the steering groups and committees. You are submitting evidence to some of the select committees in terms of payment, delays to payment. But it'd be good to just hear a bit about that.
The reality is government is complex, right? You have the Department of Business and Trade, and then you have the Treasury, and then you have the Small Business Minister. And we spend quite a bit of time making sure that everybody hears from us how passionate we are about helping small businesses. And prompt payments or late payments is one of the topics that we spend the most time talking to them about. But equally, we engage with the government around topics such as, look, small businesses need certainty, right? And so when you think about some of the kind of different budgets we had last year as different governments were happening, one of the things small businesses were suffering from was just a lack of certainty. Every budget had new tax rules in it. When you think about some of the certainty that's necessary around MTD for ITSA and the work we do with Treasury and HMRC on that, it's all around try and give small businesses a very clear roadmap of what is coming and when it is coming. So those are conversations with various different ministries or different levels within the government. I do feel, and by now I've met everyone I had to meet either in Whitehall or Westminster. And once I've met everybody, I just go and do the rounds again. It's really important that hopefully we carry the message of what small businesses need and what the government can do to help them.
Definitely. And yeah, it was great that they came along to the roadshow. The roadshow was buzzing in London. Unfortunately, I couldn't be there the whole time. I had to leave early. But I believe there were some insights coming in the later part that I unfortunately had to miss. And maybe you can enlighten me or sneaky bits you can give us that we might see from Xero in the near future.
Absolutely. We did have some announcements in regards to cash flow management specifically. You would have seen Cresco was one of the app partners that was out on the app partner floor at the conference. And we are announcing a bill payment experience with Cresco, which is embedded and which allows either single bill batch bill payments with a very easy user experience. And the other announcement is Xero is the first major small business accounting software in the UK to launch e-invoicing in the UK. And we're starting with the ability to receive e-invoices. Later this year, we will start issuing our own Xero invoices as an e-invoice. And obviously, we will continue working on the rollout of e-invoicing as a functionality.
That bit really excites me, Alex, because we've been banging on about e-invoicing for feels like decades, and very exciting. We'll definitely keep you on our radar for another appearance at some point in the future, Alex.
That's very kind. And I obviously look forward to seeing all of you at XeroCon in London in June at the Excel. It will hopefully be a few degrees cooler than it was last year. And it'll be a big event. We're really looking forward to making it better and bigger than ever.
We'll definitely be there, I think.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on, Alex.
Thank you, Indy. Thank you, Ryan, John. Thank you very much for your time. I always appreciate chatting to you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So that brings another podcast to an end. Thank you for joining, listening. please do leave a review. If you've not checked out our new website, The Digital Disruptors, please do check that out. That's where you can find any information on our podcast, on the Digital Digest, which is our webinar series, on our app news, and the future newsletter. Do check it out. If you love this show, please do refer it. We are trying to spread the word and get more people listening in. Thanks, and check you out next episode.
We love you. Goodbye.